is the Freedom Beam, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 kelvins to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Jane? And I did it again. Sean and... Oh, I can't even do this tonight. John and Shane. Hey.
You must be feeling it.
Wow. I can hear it.
I'm feeling something. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCAT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCAT.org. Well, I'll try to get my words in order here. What's up, everybody? This is the Freedom Fiends. We are back. I am Jeremy, joined tonight by John and Shane. There we go.
There it is.
Hello.
What's up, guys?
I know.
Yeah. I've gotten better with that, but every once in a while, when I want to say your two names together, I know it in my head ahead of time. I'm gonna screw it up.
It is a little bit of a tongue twister, I guess.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things I've done to myself. But anyway, so yeah, so we're here, we're back, we're all alive. Woohoo! Survive. Well, we're talking a little bit before the show about, you know, the fact that it's snowing everywhere. I guess we've all survived the first apocalypse of the winter, right? I don't know what you guys got over there. We didn't get much over here, but we got snow.
We got a light dusting in Cincinnati that didn't really stick.
I got quite a bit, and where I'm at, I'm out in the woods and stuff, so it's not like we have like plows and dirt and paved roads and stuff like that. So when it sticks, it definitely sticks.
Yeah, I mean, we got, I don't know, I think it was like 2 or 3 inches out on my lawn, but it didn't really stick to the roads at all, so, and, you know, my kids were disappointed because they kept seeing it snowing, and they're like, we want to go outside and play. I'm like, it's not even sticking anywhere yet. Like, no, you're just going to run around and get wet at this point. There's not even any snow to play in. And then when there was a little bit today, then they were all disappointed because we tried to go get snow boots for them because, you know, kids, they grow out of their shoes in like a day or so. So we're constantly having to upgrade their equipment and try to go out shopping for them yesterday before the snow came in. And unfortunately, despite the fact that I have, you know, identical twins, they are nowhere near the same size in anything at this point. So it was like difficult finding both of them. We could only find one of them boots that fit. And then the other one, it was like, well, now we have to order them online. It's like, well, now you can't go outside. Sorry. I don't know. I remember back in the... I mean, I've done it before with them, but I'd rather not because I know the mess. But I remember back in the day, like, I used to, you know, snow boots. Who needed those? You know, you throw some bags in your shoes and just run outside with those, right? Did you guys ever do that?
I remember that. I totally remember that.
Yeah, you know, I used to go out in, you know, jeans, throw just a couple layers underneath it. It's like, fine, yeah, whatever. One layer gets wet, you'll be fine for a while. It's great. How I didn't have pneumonia more as a child, I have no idea. Maybe that's why I don't do it with my own kids, because I know what should happen.
Yeah, that's true.
But, yeah, so, I mean, what is it? It's only, what are we, mid-December here? And
yeah, it came up quick.
It's actually kind of early for the first snow around here in New York, at least the past couple of years. We usually don't get hit until after Christmas. And
yeah, that kind of seems like the case.
Yeah, at least the past 5 years or so. I found myself saying this like every year, every couple of years, like really trying to remember back and going, I don't remember, you know, I must just be getting old. Or maybe I hang out with Michael too much because my mind just automatically goes to, I don't remember things being this bad before back in the day, you know. And it's really been like the past, I guess, 5 or 10 years here, the weather pattern shifted here in New York, where it's not, whatchamacallit, where it doesn't snow. We still get snow, and we still get a good amount of it, but it doesn't start until much later in the year. Because I remember before that, you know, it used to start snowing, like, plenty of Thanksgivings we had, you know, forget about a snow, you know, a white Christmas. We had white Thanksgivings. And that just doesn't happen anymore. I mean, heck, I think around Thanksgiving, at least somewhere, well, at least a couple days beforehand or a couple days afterwards this year, it was still somewhere in like the 50s or 60s around here.
Yeah, it was a little bit crazy this year.
here in Cincinnati in the Midwest, it's a little bit more mild than it was like up in where I used to live in northern Indiana. They used to get a lot of, you know, lake effect snow and stuff up there. But I remember way back in 2013, 2014, we got something called like a polar vortex, where it was like the jet stream was coming straight down from like the North Pole. It felt like, yeah. And man, that was crazy cold. I hadn't experienced anything like that in recent memory.
Yeah, I spend a lot more time out in the cold. Well, at least I used to when my business was in full swing, you know, for years. Because the joke I always used to tell was like, you know, I was like the mailman, but better, because I showed up at your house 7 days a week to take care of your dog, no matter the weather. And, you know, I've walked in blizzards. I've walked to people's houses in blizzards, you know, because I couldn't get my car out, even with my all-wheel drive, because the roads were just so horrible and, you know, nobody was on the road. And they had those the warnings that, you know, they make it as a warning, but basically if you get caught on the road, they'll arrest you, that type of thing. It's like nobody's allowed on the road. So like I've gotten out and walked, so I'm, you know, a little bit more used to being in the elements than some people are. But yeah, I remember when the vortex came through. That was definitely a chilly time to be out walking the puppies.
Yeah, I remember them talking about that on the news, that vortex.
Yeah, so, but, you know, whatever. Whenever the weather acts like this, you know, I just I thank government and HARP, you know, and it's and move on.
Thanks, HARP.
Exactly.
So, but yeah, so let's see. What else? I don't know. I don't know what you guys have been up to. I'm trying to think what I've been up to. I'm still busy. Well, I'm still busy mining away on my cryptocurrencies. And go ahead.
You guys. I know. Well, this weekend my smartphone broke, which we hear on the show sometimes call Chrome Robot Turd. And mine was all black, so I just call it a robot turd. But you know how we have our lovely devices, which can go on the brink. And yeah, so I'm currently without a phone, working on the situation. Either going to have to get this one up and running, or get it fixed and sent a new one sent back.
Well, that's terribly inconvenient.
Yeah.
I don't. I mean, yeah, you know, you're saying, you know, how we're always attached to our devices and stuff. And if that happened to me right now, I'd probably freak out. Only, I mean, I have like, you know, laptops, I have like computers all over the place. But for the first time in actually probably my life, I actually don't have a backup for that if that happens. Because, you know, I was one of the last people alive to still have a landline up until a couple of months ago. So if my robot turd went down, then I'd be in a lot of trouble, because I'd have to like try to contact people through Facebook, or hook up an old phone through the Wi-Fi just so I could use Telegram or Signal and connect to people. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking to anybody, because I wouldn't have contact, and that wouldn't be good for me. Actually, on some level it would be. It would help me with my hermit mode, because that I like to be in. But yeah, it'd be very inconvenient not to be able to make phone calls anymore. I hadn't even thought of that until you talked about your phone going down, and then I'm like, oh yeah, if that happens to me now, I'm kind of in trouble. I never had to think about that before.
I would be stoked if that happened.
I got an old burner phone that has Wi-Fi as a backup, but I haven't switched my number back over to it yet. I want to try to get, you know, my current phone working, but if not, then I'll have to maybe switch back to the burner.
Oh, technology. It is... As I like to say, you know, our savior and the bane of our existence all at the same time. It's wonderful.
That is the truth.
Well, hopefully you figure a fix out for that soon, Shane, because I know how annoying that could be. What about you, John? What's going on with you?
I've been working hard on that next book I'm doing, and pretty much just spending a lot of time doing that when I'm not dealing with the whole doctor's thing. And I've been coming ahead pretty good on that, especially now that I've been ditching social media a little bit, even though it kind of does suck me in from time to time still. But the social media diet that I've been on, I guess you could say, has really helped me get a lot more writing done.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I saw you made a, I think I saw a post about that either yesterday or today from you, saying you're cruising along with the word count, right?
Yeah, I'm like at like 50,000 words, and I should be done pretty soon. It's like it's a novel about the drug war, basically, and my experiences in it now that the statute of limitations are up.
Oh, isn't that Isn't that wonderful? It's, you have to be careful of what you say and or write about your own experiences, lest you somehow, you know, injure yourself. Well, the state will injure you, but you end up injured further. That should be quite an interesting read. I look forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be a good one. I mean, it's exciting to go through, and especially kind of like relive and process some of the crazier things that I've been through.
Yeah,
I remember back in the day, on some forums, people would use the acronym SWIM, which stood for someone who isn't me.
Yeah,
and I used to see that quite often.
Back on all the drug forums and stuff, like Blue Light and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I used to frequent them.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, a variation of, so my friend was telling me that he
asking for a friend.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the original message board, asking for a friend. Someone who isn't me.
That's pretty funny. I never really frequented much of any boards, but I do actually remember that acronym. that's funny.
Yeah, I used to, when I was doing the whole rave thing for a long time, which is actually where most of those adventures happened, they always used to have the pill reports on those websites, so you could, like, search by the stamp that was on the pill and know whether it was going to, you know, make you fish out on the ground or not.
Yes, but, you know, without government, how would we protect ourselves from dangerous drugs? You know,
it probably wouldn't be dangerous.
Exactly. I was going to say, other than the free market taking care of it in a manner like that, you know, people creating their reports on it.
Yeah, exactly. Even in the, you know, even under the thumb of government, there still is those kind of free market solutions, which end up being like black market solutions in that situation.
Well, yeah. Although, you know, I would argue that the black market is the free market.
Indeed.
And speaking of that, what great timing. I hear the music, which means we are going to take a trip to the market. But we will return after that.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
Meow. And we're back. And in the last segment, before we started talking about some other things, I had mentioned, I think, Bitcoin, which actually came back to into my sphere in the past couple of days. For those who don't remember, Bitcoin was the cryptocurrency that Michael created. Was that a year and a half ago, maybe now? Not actually a year ago, I guess, somewhere around there, year and a half, and that he finally gave up the reins to earlier this year. And most of us kind of forgot about. I know a lot of people kind of dumped whatever they had because a bunch of the fiends and some other people had mined a bunch of them at the beginning, and you know, kind of forgotten about it. And then I just happened to look the other day, just on a whim, and the price had shot. Like it had been hovering somewhere around like the 2 cent range per bip for, like, you know, for months now, I guess. And then all of a sudden I noticed the other day it had shot up to 9 cents, and then a couple other people noticed that and were posting things about it, you know, kind of joking with all the other cryptocurrencies that are kind of taking off. You know, even some of the sillier ones, like the Mana coin, I guess. Is that the one that's the one I'm thinking of, right? The one that has the cat as their logo, kind of like the Dogecoin one. That one's like exploding right now.
Oh yeah, Dogecoin is taking off.
Well, yeah, I mean, Doge go off is a little, but the Mana coin one, the last time I looked at it, when I first became aware of it, like a month or two ago, it was only like a $2 or $3. I saw yesterday it was up to like 15. But so like crazy things like that are happening. So, you know, kind of like just joking around. It's like, hey, yeah, Bitcoin finally, hopefully that'll finally take off. And I went to go look because I had a couple of different wallets because I had been mining on multiple computers. And I ended up finding all, like, I thought I had missed, like, at one point I thought I had, like, tens of thousands of BIPs. And then the last time I looked, I only had, like, 3,000. I'm like, that's weird. Apparently, I had a wallet I forgot about. So I found all my BIPs and I started doing, like, you know, crazy calculations in my head. You know, I'm like, even at 9 cents, it's still great. And then I actually got tipped off by former fiend Jim Jesus that something had happened to the Bitcoin network yesterday where all of a sudden the hash rate of the entire network had dipped down to like 7,000 for some reason, and it just became like insanely easy for anybody to mine BIPs again. And only a couple of people noticed this, so a bunch of people hopped on, and I actually turned my Monero miner over to Bitcoin just for like 12 hours just to see what would happen. And I ended up, you know, in 12 hours, I ended up getting like 400 BIPs with even now that it's down to like, I think, 7 cents. That's still like, you know, for a day, that would have been about 800. So that's like $56 for a day for mining Bitcoin.
Wow. Hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's more profitable than Monero is for me right now.
Yeah,
so I was like, so hopefully, I know I talked to Michael about it. I know he had said that the new dev had actually was busy for a little while and then it just kind of disappeared. But I went and looked at the new thread that got started by them in the Bitcoin Talk, Bitcoin Talk, the forums. And it looks like they had been, the two of the devs had been talking to people within a couple of weeks and talking about things that they have in the pipeline and stuff like that. So hopefully that will finally start to go somewhere, which would be exciting as heck because, you know, it's the one coin that I actually hold a lot of.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
So you're still a hodler then.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, and it's funny too, because when I went looking a couple of weeks ago, like a month or two ago or whatever it was, and just to see if I could find my BIPs, and I could only find those, you know, 3,000 or whatever it was. I was looking at it at the time, like, all right, right now it was like 3 or 4 cents, whatever it was. I think if I had tried to exchange all of them at that point, it would have essentially been like $74 or something like that. And I was like, all right, I'll trade them in and I'll get a Litecoin. You know, that's fine. before Litecoin actually took off again, and now I just saw is starting to surge again. Recently, because, you know, it finally broke through. It broke over 100 last week or something, and now it's up over 150, 160. But I was going to do it, and then I just never got around to it because I was like, oh, I got to deal with the exchanges, and I don't want to have to deal with that right now. So I never did it. And well, I'm glad I didn't. now the price is rising a little bit. But you know, it's one of those things that, you know, don't really ever expect it to happen. But even if Bitcoin ever hit a dollar. If I could manage to get rid of all mine, I'd be in pretty good shape.
That's pretty awesome.
The hodlers are always right.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, unless the entire system collapses, of course. I mean, Michael actually had a post about that the other day saying something about always hodl because he had like 3,000 Phoenix or some ridiculous number of Phoenix coins that would have been worth like $3,000 today if he hadn't gotten rid of them when he did. So hodl, 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 people. The name of the game. We'll be back. Worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Man, there existed stickers. They used to not exist. Now they exist.
That's funny. DJ, how do you like the Fiend stickers on our coffee pot?
They're gorgeous.
Yes. What do they say?
State speech is hate speech. And BIPCOT. .org.
Yeah, and people can get them by going to freedomfiends.com and clicking on the new link at the top. It says stickers, and there will be more designs. So check back regularly. Catch them all.
Worms.
Meow. Wow.
Way to play. And we're back. We were talking cryptos again, of course, as we like to do on Sunday nights during the last segment. And I brought up the whole thing about Bitcoin. So I just want to reiterate for anybody who does have mining equipment out there, if you're feeling frustrated with certain things being less profitable at the current moment, like Monero, unfortunately, because the difficulty rose on that again the other day. So until another price surge happens, it's probably going to be a little bit more difficult for a lot of us to get a lot of Monero that way. There's other directions you can go in, and you should definitely look into Bitcoin because it's relatively profitable at the moment. So I highly encourage people checking that out. In other crypto news, we have a couple of things going on. I unfortunately am flying blind at the moment because I was a bad boy and waited to the last minute to restart all my equipment because I was trying to let my miner run as long as possible. And my second laptop, which is the one I use for the articles that we talk about to be able to read these things while we're on the air, is still updating because Windows is taking the longest I've ever seen it to update at the present moment. But I know that I had a couple of things I just wanted to mention quick. One of them was there was an article that Craigslist apparently has now actually has an option when you go to try to sell and or buy stuff from their website. That you can actually either find out that the seller offers crypto as payment for their stuff, or you could put it in your own ads. So that's I think that's a huge thing. I mean, it may not seem it to a lot of people, but you know, tons of people use Craigslist, so that's kind of a mainstream thing that it's like now a viable option. You know, before that, I think you could like write it in your own. You know, if you wrote it in your ad, you could say, oh, I accept cryptocurrencies, stuff like that. Now there's actually a box you can check.
Yeah.
So woo-hoo.
This is an increase in the adoption of Bitcoin, which is a good thing.
Exactly. So, and it actually is funny. I've been on Craigslist recently trying to sell a bunch of stuff to obviously get some money, as you know, being without a full-time job is starting to get to me at this point, but also to try to clear some space around here so I have less to travel with when I finally do have to pack up and move out of here. And I didn't even think of that at the time, that you know, when I was when I was putting stuff up for sale, I didn't even think about the whole cryptocurrency route. But now that I know this, I think I'm going to go back and redo all my ads and put that option out there, and hopefully I'll get some takers for some of my stuff and I can get paid in cryptos instead. That would be exciting.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hopefully people take advantage of it now. I remember I actually posted about it the other day. I'm throwing this out there, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, if there was somebody else, but I do believe that I was the first rave promoter in the world to accept Bitcoin. Now, nobody took advantage of it. Nobody ever paid me in Bitcoin, but it was around like 2012, 2013. I had a QR code at the front desk or the front gate of all my shows, and I told everybody pay in Bitcoin, and it was half price. Nobody ever took advantage. Everybody was like, what is Bitcoin? What is that?
Yeah. Well, see, I didn't even think. Oh, go ahead, Shane.
I was going to say he's like Cyberpunk Zero.
Yep.
Yeah, I was going to say, I never thought of it. I may have actually been, if not the first, one of the first pet sitters to accept Bitcoin. Although nobody ever took me up on that either, because I think I started offering it to my clients even before I had any Bitcoin of my own.
Same
here. I think I had one wallet back then. It was probably around 2013 that I started telling people, hey, I'll take it if you want to give it to me. But nobody ever took me up on that. And in the end, only one person ever took me up on that. I wasn't offering half price, though. I think I was only offering a 10% discount.
But I started saying that, and it costed like one Bitcoin to get into my show at that time, and that was half price.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah, and the only reason
it's one expensive party these days.
Oh, exactly. The reason why I started offering was because I didn't know how to get a hold of any of it at the time. That was like the Mt. Gox days, so I figured maybe if I like offered services for it, then maybe I could get some.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I think Lou had been doing for a while, because at my very first Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, Lou was selling his, you know, food and his bacon for Bitcoin. And I actually took him up on it because I had some. And so back in 2015, I spent about $5 worth of Bitcoin on some bacon. And that would be worth about $100 today. But it's all good. Yeah, Thank you for your food service, Lou.
I've gotten some really expensive bacon and eggs at Porkfest over the years. Yeah. It wasn't expensive at the time, but it is now.
Oh, yeah. That's why I always see people, like, you see people on social media always making those calculations, like writing them out and saying, oh, if I hadn't spent this. And like, I try really hard not to think about those things, because it will drive me nuts. Because, you know, Shane, you mentioned Lou. I was thinking about that, and I was like, oh, yeah, last year I bought a couple of bottles of water off Lou. I can't even imagine how expensive those bottles of water are now, because it was like those late night things where I was stumbling around drunk, and I was like, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. My camp's all the way on the other side. I don't want to walk that far. Oh, wait a minute. Lou's camper's right there. And he's got his cooler outside with a QR code. Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm stumbling over there for water and not even thinking about it. Just like, oh, there's my Bitcoin. No big deal. Same thing at Porkfest, you know, sandwiches.
Was that easy to manage while you were drunk, or?
Yes. Yeah, I was able to do it. The most difficult thing was getting the password to turn the encryption off on my phone, you know, to like get into my phone.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. I kept messing that up. Once I got in, getting into my wallet and actually making the purchase was no problem.
Yeah, sometimes when I eat that paper, I have a problem with my phone.
Oh yeah, if I had been eating paper, I wouldn't want to be anywhere near my phone. Yeah, I don't like looking at digital things when that happens, because bad things usually occur.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was comparing it to, because I can't drink anymore.
Yeah, John, totally, you should have been at Anarchon this year in Virginia. It was a lot of fun.
Oh man, that's not too far from me. Maybe I could check that out next time.
Yeah, Cal Molinay led us on a very interesting hike in the Virginia mountains. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we've heard a little bit about this, and that was Kyle just a little bit before his fiend days now, since he's
not. Yeah, and now he's a fiend.
So yeah, I'm hoping to make it down there for that one next year. I really want to go.
Is that a summertime thing, or?
It's in September, early September. At least it was this time. They try to have it around Labor Day every year.
Cool.
Yeah, I wanted to, because, you know, normally Labor Day in general, like any time around there, was in the past was always out for me to do anything, because it was always one of the busiest times of the year for me with my business, because everybody going back to school and trying to get like one last vacation in and stuff like that. Or conversely, the people who waited until their kids went back to school so they could go off and do stuff, and then they needed little trips and stuff like that. So, you know, it was always a busy time for me. But this year, as things were winding down, I was like, oh, I really want to go. But with everything else I was dealing with, it just wasn't going to happen. But yeah, hopefully next year I can make it down.
But yeah, the hardest part for me about using Bitcoin at the Peace and Liberty Fest with Lou's bacon was for Lou to know whose transaction was whose, if we weren't like, you know, labeling anything. how does one keep track when you have all these people paying for stuff? You know,
it's the honor system, man.
Yeah, pretty much it is.
Don't and some thing old I noticed, coins kind of have a solution to that now, where you're like, can you put messages in there and stuff like that? Is that true?
Some of them may. I'm not aware of. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I mean, stuff with like Monero and other things like that, you could use payment IDs, so you'd be able to, you know, you'd be able to tell if you did that. I think there might be other stuff too. I'm sure. I mean, there are ways, but. You know, in those
different addresses, I guess. But when you're doing a business, that would be a lot.
Well, no, yeah, I know, but that's why there are ways to track that stuff. You know, but then of course you would have to figure it out at the end of the day, and then try to track each person down and be like, hey, okay, you know, this came from you and this came from you. But yeah, you just got to go on the honor system. But you know, it works with FRNs in those situations, because, you know, plenty of people just leave their, I mean, I was one of them, you know, just you leave a bucket out next to the stuff you're selling and you walk away from it. And you know, I'm sure occasionally people get robbed, but for the most part, everybody's pretty cool about it and just leave their stuff alone. So you got to imagine the same. It would work the same way.
Right.
With cryptos, you know, people just walk
it's
by.
It's one of my first. Yeah. The buying the bacon, I think, was my first crypto transaction. And it took probably about 45 minutes to go through.
All right. Let me just say that is awesome. If that's true, your very first crypto transaction was for bacon.
Yeah, it was. I bought bacon from Lou.
That is that's even better than the what was it, 20,000 Bitcoin pizzas, yeah, or whatever they were.
And I think it took about 45 minutes to go through, but that's okay because it took about the same amount of time for the bacon to actually finally get cooked.
I wonder how long that would take now.
Now I guess it depends on how high you set the priority or the transaction fee.
You can set that.
And if it's a SegWit wallet, most nodes are not actually running the SegWit update yet. So if you're trading from SegWit to SegWit, it actually is faster with a lower fee. But most nodes are not SegWit yet.
Yeah, I had to deal with that when I got my hardware wallet, the Nano, the Ledger. And, you know, it gives you the option of which wallet. And I was just like, oh, yeah, the SegWit. And then when I made the transactions, they just, you know, I chose low priority and they still came through in like 20 minutes with, you know, with the lowest fee possible. And I was like, I can deal with that.
Yeah. SegWit is a legit upgrade. We just have to give it time to take because it's actually a soft fork. It wasn't like forced on the network. It's something that the nodes have to adopt on their own.
Yeah. And, you know, I've, as we've talked about before, you know, I try to hodl, and I don't deal much, well, at least with my Bitcoin anymore. I've switched to other coins as far as currency goes, but I try not to have to deal with making transactions, but I guess I've just gotten lucky because pretty much every transaction I've had to make in the past couple of weeks, you know, the fee wasn't that crazy, and I had to, you know, wait 20 minutes most. And I keep looking at everybody else going, what's your problem? I don't understand.
Exactly.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agrist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime, or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agrist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
Meow.
Meow. And we're back. And we were so busy talking during the break that I forgot where we left off. Shane, do you remember?
Yeah. I was begging them for a crash course on what various terms meant.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to get back to that later. But
we were talking crypto stuff before the break.
Well, that I know.
I think during this segment, we can probably wrap up the rest of the crypto stuff that we have going on. I don't remember the exact spot that we left off. So I guess we could just jump into it.
Yeah, well, we mentioned the Craigslist thing, and then we hopped all over the place. So
we did mention the Craigslist thing, and then we kind of got on a tangent. But to get back on subject here for the final segment of the first hour, we can cover, I think, the big news in Bitcoin, and probably a lot of the reason for the price action is that futures are beginning to trade this week on Bitcoin on different exchanges, not just CME Group. But Jeremy shared an article about another exchange that they're sharing on called CBOE, which I'm not really familiar with.
Yeah, that launched, I believe, at 8:30 this evening. and had to be taken offline promptly 2 minutes into the trading. Because they, from what I remember about from that particular article, is they had already set up because of the volatility to try to rule out some of the issues with the volatility to try to like stop people from taking advantage of it, like wild swings and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they had it set up off the bat where the trading would be turned off for 2 minutes if the volatility swung to, I think, 10% in either direction, and 5 minutes or longer if it shoots up to 20, something like that. See,
this kind of like raised a bunch of red flags for me, because, you know, we all know how the stock market works with these crazy algorithms and stuff where there aren't even really traders on the floor anymore. You know what I'm saying? They're all done in buildings by bots with computers, and they totally rig the stock market that way. Now, Bitcoin is an entirely different monster because of its nature. So it's going to be interesting to see how those two worlds collide. And it makes me wonder, with these things that they're saying, like, are they trying to figure out how to manipulate this? And I think the answer to that is obvious.
Oh, yeah. They see it as a threat. They, unless they can control it, it's a threat to them. So
they can manipulate everything now.
Right. And
they're going into this with that same mindset. You know it.
Right. And CME Group, which is a Chicago Mercantile Exchange, they're known for speculating on derivatives and things like that. They're the ones who inflate a lot of these bubbles. And if they're trying to, if Bitcoin hasn't been a bubble to this point, they're going to try to make it one. And they're going to probably, yeah, they could triple the volume of trading on Bitcoin in a short amount of time, which could have a lot of effect on the price as well. But they could also pull the rug out from that as well. So it would come back down to its classic support levels that have always been there from the original Bitcoin community, you know. And so I think from here on out, we're going to see a lot of volatility from, you know, this extra speculation going into Bitcoin and all this institutional money being thrown around. But ultimately, I think the support that was always there originally will always be there. So if they try to pull the rug out or crash the bubble or burst the bubble, I think it'll still come down to, maybe it won't go any lower than like 10K at the lowest.
Yeah, well, I always make this comparison with because a lot of the people who kind of poo-poo it, they always claim it's a bubble. And even if they're right, even if the bubble pops, it's probably still going to be worth more than a dollar, A. And B, it's still a new revolutionary tech. Like, with the dot-com bubble, you know, that was a bubble in websites, and it's not like websites are gone, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the strong survived. And they continued. So, yeah.
And it's still one of the biggest industries in the world. It's still, like, ruling the world, essentially, websites, you know? So, I have a feeling that even if a bubble does pop in crypto, I have a feeling it's going to be the same way.
I think you're right, because, you know, and what Shane, what you said too, like, even if these guys do try to crash it and stuff, that, you know, the people that have adopted it already and are, you know, are confident in the technology in general will keep it going. And yeah, I mean, maybe lower than 10K, maybe back to the, you know, somewhere in the 6, 7, 8K range where most people were saying there was still stable, you know, a stable price for that. Which is still, you know, I mean, except for the people who got in recently, still a good deal for a lot of us. And yeah, and even if they do manage to, quote unquote, topple Bitcoin, there's plenty of other ones that are sitting behind it to take its place. So I don't think they can stop anything. But we all might be able to make a little money along the way while they try to mess around with it. Good times, man. Good times. With that, we'll head off to the break. We'll be back in the second hour.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Real. Trigger warning. Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more, go to BIPCOT.org. All right. And this is Shane, and I'm back for the second hour of the Freedom Fiends, and I'm here with Jeremy and John.
Woo-hoo!
And I just wanted to say that blessed are the meme makers, because they are the children of Doge. And that was just a little something I came up with when I was thinking about all the people who've influenced me as far as, you know, memes go. I do kind of pride myself on my some of the memes I've made over the years, but I did have a lot of influence on, you know, memes and, you know, how to make them and things like that. And Jeremy was one of those influences in the early days, back when I first became an anarchist. And other people like, you know, Johnny Liberty and Anarchy Ball Ben.
I was gonna say if you don't know Johnny Liberty, then he probably, like, he has made so many memes out there, and it's
I don't know if I may have talked. I know I've talked about this on the Seeds of Liberty. I don't know if I talked about it here, but yeah, Johnny's my meme father. We had him on the Seeds of Liberty way back when, and he just kind of like hijacked the show. Like, I don't even remember what we were talking about. I think we were actually talking about police violence. Or, you know, police brutality and stuff like that. And he just kind of flipped the script halfway through the show and was like, we shifted towards memes. And then he basically asked us if we wanted a tutorial. And then he just basically went into like the rest of the show, like explaining like what goes into like making a meme and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And right after that, like he, you know, him and I started messaging back and forth. And, you know, he kind of convinced me to try to start making, because I had made a couple of them and I just wasn't really putting a lot of effort into it. And he was like, he saw some of my stuff and he's like, you have really good ideas, but you need to, like, you know, visually, you need help, you know, with working with this stuff. So he just gave me a bunch of pointers, and yeah, he was like, I would, like, for the longest time, things that I would make, I would send to him first and basically get his approval. And if him and a couple other people that he introduced me to, like, basically I would message them with the memes. And if I got like thumbs up from them, I'm like, okay, this is postable. Here we go. that's funny that you mentioned him, but yeah, Johnny's a great guy.
That particular episode of The Seeds, I think it was a few weeks or about a month before I first came on your show, on your other podcast. And Johnny Liberty was a really big influence on my early meme-making days. But, we've got some new guys, and they're really cracking me up lately. I don't know if you're friends. Well, I know some, you are, Jeremy, but I don't know if John is friends with Daniel James on Facebook. But
I've never came across him.
His meme skills crack me up on a daily basis. Just wanted to give him a shout out too.
Yeah, you know, I've said before, I try not to spend too much time on social media, but I do. I have even more of appreciation for people's, like, humor with memes, especially like people like Daniel, like you're talking about, because he doesn't always go for the political stuff. It's just usually just about the laughs with him. Right. You know, obviously it crosses into different territories, just being who he is, and just because he tries to be topical sometimes too. But I have such more appreciation for like just the funny ones now, because when I do stumble onto social media and try to get in and out as quick as possible and just do what I need to do while I'm there, when I see stuff like that, they actually do bring giant smiles to my face, and I'm like, oh, this is the good stuff. If I could have just like a feed of just these, it'd be great.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear that, man.
Yeah.
But yeah. You mentioned the police earlier, and that does kind of segue into one of the big articles that we were going to talk about. And this one is from the National Review, and it's about the police murder of Daniel Shaver. And there's been a video going around Facebook a lot lately, because I think this police officer, I don't know when this happened, but he was recently.
Yeah.
I think this was a year ago or maybe 2 years ago now at this point when it actually happened.
And this is And this is probably why now we're finally getting to see this video.
Yeah, the video didn't come out and go viral until the day of or the day after the acquittal, I believe.
And the reaction has been insane. People on all sides. Like, I have, you know, usually see the bootlickers defending the cops. You don't even see that. I haven't yet. And usually there's always, like, even with the most ridiculous stories, it's like, oh, they can't bootlick on this one. And sure enough, they come out of the woodwork and they start sucking on boots. You know what I mean? But in this situation, it doesn't seem like anybody is willing to defend this.
Well, it's about time. But yeah, I was mentioning this earlier, like the fact that, you know, because there's tons of articles you can find on this, obviously. I just happened to find one from the National Review, and like you said, John, you know, people from all sides, and that's what I found interesting about this particular article, and especially what the guy was saying, because this is from National Review, which still touts itself as a conservative site, but in reality is really like hardcore neocon. You know, and has been for a very long time. So for even them to be publishing stuff like that, like that says a lot, because I didn't watch the video, and we're burying the lead a little bit, but we'll get back to that in a second. But like I watched the video of this just before, you know, an hour before the show, because I had been putting it off. Because I've, you know, when you've seen enough of these type of videos, you've seen more than enough.
I can't watch them anymore. I can't.
But, yeah, I used to share a lot of videos and stuff like this all the time.
No, me too.
You know, as kind of an activist, you know, when it comes to this sort of thing. But I eventually kind of got burned out on it, and I do, you know, care about this kind of stuff happening, but I'm not so, you know, in everyone's face about it all the time. But then I had seen this video going around, and I put off watching it until tonight because we're going to be talking about it.
Exactly.
And so. And it was kind of what I expected, you know. Go ahead.
Yeah, so like I said, we were burying the lead a little bit. So the story of this was, for those who aren't aware, was this guy, what was his name again? Daniel Shaver, right? My computer, unfortunately, is still not up. He apparently was partying. It was in a hotel in Arizona, right? And
right.
He was up there hanging out. He was a pest control guy, and you know, he was just hanging out, and he was with a couple of people in his hotel room, and he had a pellet gun that I guess he used for his job that he was kind of showing off to them, and they were all drinking and having fun and stuff. But somebody reported him, you know, if you see something, call, you know, if you see something, say something. Somebody decided to call and report that a guy was brandishing a rifle around in a room. So of course the police were dispatched to investigate, and when they show up, you know, they of course do what police do and make things worse. And the video really is just horrible, because you see the video, at least where I saw it start from, was they're coming down the hallway, and the door to the room opens, and the only people left are Daniel and this woman that is still with him there. And she comes out of the room first, and he comes out like a couple seconds later, and the police, like, they immediately order them both down on the ground. So both of them pretty much drop, you know, they're inebriated, but they both pretty much drop immediately and are down to the ground, and they make them wait there for a while. And then they start giving these like really insane instructions about how he has to like crawl towards, even though he's already down, they're down on the ground with their hands above their heads, where, you know, obviously multiple cops are there. They totally could have come up on these people and, you know, handcuffed them right then if that's what they were trying to do. But instead they make him lay in this position and then give this a ridiculous set of instructions about how they have to crawl with their hands still above their head, but not touching it, like, you know, and doing all this stuff and just screaming.
Crawl with their legs crossed and their hands up, not touching the ground. It's like, wow, that was pretty difficult to do.
Yeah, like even sober and not petrified for, you know, not scared for your life, it would be a difficult task to crawl in the manner that was described as what the, you know, because you can hear the cop barking the orders out on the video, so you can hear what he's asking him to do. So the guy tries to do it and then almost falls over once, and they scream at him and make him put his hands way up in the air. And then you hear the cop basically say, not basically say, he says, you know, I don't care, you know, if you fall, you better fall down on your face, basically, because he doesn't want his hands to go down. And, you know, if you do anything, we will shoot you. And the poor guy
is the thing.
Yeah.
And they obviously have control over the situation. And not only do they not need him to crawl, they definitely don't need to shoot him at this point.
Yeah. Like, it's even insane that it got to that point. Like,
why couldn't they just walk over to him and cuff him if that was what they were trying to do? Yeah.
Yeah, so, and the poor guy, the whole time, like, when they say that, you hear him say, please don't shoot me, and he's sobbing. Like, he's crying at this point, because he's obviously scared out of his mind. You know, here he is hanging out, having a good time in a hotel room partying, and, you know, and the next thing you know, he's got a bunch of armed thugs in his face barking orders at him, and he's doing everything he possibly can to follow their instructions, because he clearly just wants to live through this. Right. And, you know, and they end up, you know, he ends up, like, after, like, he starts crawling forward again and trying to follow everything that they're telling him, and you see him kind of lurch forward a little bit, like, you know, he might have tripped over his own pants in the process of trying to, like, crawl, and, like, he reaches back to, like, grab his, like, pants or something, which are probably falling down at that point, and they just pump, like, 5 shots into him in this hallway, and that this guy's life is over. And it's just, like, I saw a couple people mention it, and, you know, now that I've seen the video, I can say that it's pretty accurate. Like, this is, like, the most hard, like, this is the worst one, I think, since Kelly Thomas.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that would be their actual protocol, to have you try to crawl with your legs crossed and your hands up. Even the female, the woman there, she seemed confused about it too. And then he tried to do the same thing. And like you were saying, yeah, he almost fell over. And all it looked like he was trying to do was pull his pants up. But that was a death sentence for him.
Yeah, and their, you know, and their claim, you know, the claim is, I thought he was reaching for a gun, you know, and it's like, okay, well, the report was the guy was waving a rifle around. You think he's hiding a rifle in his pants that you somehow missed as he's crawling across the floor at you? Like, seriously, you know, and it's just despicable, and the fact that, of course, the guy got away with it is just makes it even more nauseating.
I want to throw things right now.
Yeah, me too. We'll have to go throw some stuff during the break. But we promise we'll be back. Worms.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert, so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers, so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride sharing that allows for payment in any form: crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
So we're back. And in the last segment, we were talking about the horrible, horrible, horrible shooting by the police of poor Daniel Shaver. That the officer in question, I guess, was just acquitted in the past couple of days.
Speaking of the meme makers, I saw a meme going around that whole thing was like a twisted game of Simon Says.
There have been multiple memes on the Simon Says theme, because That's essentially what it was. You know, this is what happens when you lose it, Simon says, when the police do it to you, because, you know, you give people increasingly more difficult tasks to follow, and eventually they're going to fall over, you know, or some whacked out game of Twister, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. I was thinking the same thing.
It's just like the fact that this video was essentially suppressed until after the verdict came out. You know, and like how blatant this is. It's just how anybody can have any regard for the so-called justice system is just beyond me, because this is just so, you know, blatant. You know, like I said, after watching this video, and I, you know, as we mentioned earlier, you know, all the three of us, you know, we've watched plenty of these as time has gone on. But this is definitely the most egregious thing I've seen since the Kelly Thomas thing, you know, where the person's practically, you know, is crying and begging, please don't kill me. Please stop. Please don't. And you just, you know, kill the person and just hide behind, you know, afraid for my life.
Yeah. We can only hope that the lack of justice here, it just creates more attention for this issue, you know what I'm saying? Especially from, you know, some of the people who we get pushback from stuff like this on, because, like you said, this was published in conservative sites where they usually are defending police. So, you know, the only positive that I could see coming from this is some furtherance of the dialogue on this issue and maybe coming to some kind of better place, I guess you could say. I mean, because obviously around here, our solution isn't abolishing it entirely, but given what all the, you know, brain dead sheeple out there are going to agree with, we could at least move a little bit further down the road as far as, you know, the interactions with police and your chance of dying are concerned.
Right. And I've seen enough of these videos also to, you know, be aware of the fact that blue lives matter at this point. And we do need to do something like perhaps privatize the police or popularize apps like Cell 411, you know, that kind of thing, you know, can help lead to accountability and competition between security, you know, private security, or, you know, even public security, if, you know, if you're going to use it like that. But we can definitely use something with more accountability and better service. I've seen, speaking of meme makers, I remember this one meme where it shows a woman on the phone, and she says, "Hello, police. I'd like to unsubscribe from your quote-unquote service."
Oh, if it were only that easy. I do love that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, obviously, that's like John, you said, I mean, that's the best case scenario, I guess, we can hope for out of this, is that more people will become disenfranchised, I guess, or at least aware of what's going on. And it does seem that at least it's trending that way already, with, you know, like you said, all these at least conservative sites too, and people you wouldn't expect. And I've seen a couple other people mention that too, that they're hearing more and more from conservative friends of theirs that are changing their mind on certain things like this, which is usually hard to do because they are kind of very gung-ho about the military, the police, and all, you know, all that patriotic BS. So
yeah, you know, the first things I want to get rid of.
You know, I mean, it obviously doesn't do anything for the, you know, for this guy's family, this guy, his family, his friends, or anything like that, you know. And I just hope it doesn't become another one of the situations where in the end, you know, the guy, well, he may not have, you know, may get acquitted, but he'll eventually either have to get fired from the public outcry, or, you know, resign peacefully, although the guy will still, he'll still probably get his pension. But,
exactly.
You know, hopefully it doesn't just stop there. Then there's a civil suit, which people end up taking that as a victory if they get money, like if the family wins in a civil suit. And it's like, well, no, because you're the ones paying for it, the taxpayers. So as long as it doesn't just stop there and people continue to be outraged, then, yeah, the best we can hope for.
It should come out of his pocket.
R.I.P. Daniel Shaver.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Fiends. Jeremy, still here with Shane and John, and I think all of us have had enough of talking about that horrible, horrible case that we were just mentioning in the past two segments. Once again, rest in peace, Daniel Shaver, but oh, yeah, talking about that too much. Kind of gets to you. So we're going to shift gears a little bit, but have another story of, well, another miscarriage of justice, unfortunately. But this one is even more bizarre, because this is a case of a guy who was arrested for having consensual sex with an underage person back when he was 19, because he met some girl on some dating app or whatever, or hookup app, that claimed she was 17. He didn't verify. Turns out later she was 14, and just because the girl was 14, when she was gone for a long time, her parents freaked out and called the cops. So when she got returned, obviously they had to let the cops know, our kid's back, and they told it, she told the parents what had happened. So they told, just naturally, not even thinking, which, never talked to the cops, but this is one of those good reasons why, told her the story, and the cops immediately arrested this guy for statutory rape. And like the girl and the parents both showed up in the courtroom to try to tell the judge to be lenient. Like, they, not even just to be lenient on him, like, they actually begged for him not to be charged in this situation.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
The parents of this girl who the law is supposedly trying to protect in this situation, because these statutory rape charges were filed not by the girl, not by her parents, just automatically. Because that's how these things work.
And another one of those cases where the charges were filed by the state and not by the victim. The victim didn't want to file charges.
Exactly. So this guy ended up, he was originally sentenced for this, for this consensual act with, we're going to get into this, probably into the whole age of consent in a minute or two, but like, put that on hold for a second. Despite what you may feel about that whole issue, and 19 or the 14-year-old, even though he may, whether you want to believe that he knew or not or whatever, like, still consensual, to the point where the parents of the girl are like, they may be not thrilled with this situation, but were okay enough with it to try to speak on this guy's behalf in this situation. Still, this guy was sentenced to 25 years on the sex offender registry for being with that, which obviously takes him out of the running for like jobs and like all these other things, and like gives people this horrible impression of him, because that's a lot of for all the good the sex offender registry may do, a lot of people don't realize that when they see like those, if they have the map, the interactive map that shows up with all the red dots that tells you all the people who are registered, a lot of people don't realize that, like, it's not just people that have that are sex offenders the way they're thinking. It could be stuff like this,
urinating in public.
Public can get you, yeah, exactly, can get you put on the sex offender registry, So, like, this guy's life was destroyed over this thing. And he was finally, his probation was finally just about to be lifted after having to deal with all this stuff. And, Now he's in trouble again, because the probation officer is trying to nail him for the fact that he violated the terms of his probation, essentially, by being in the same room alone with a 17-year-old, a male, and being in the same vicinity of a 17-year-old female, because there's some weird thing in the law that unfortunately for them has actually been ruled unconstitutional already, but they're still enforcing it on him anyway.
Yeah.
That, you know, all this crazy stuff about, you know, you have, you know, even having incidental contact with anybody under the age is a violation, and you're supposed to report this immediately, you know. And it's written so vaguely that it could be like in any situation that it's so incidental that you're not even aware that the person around, like, is behind you. Like, you haven't actually spoken to this person or had any interaction with him, but just because you're literally in the vicinity with him, and if you're not aware of it, like, you're in violation of that.
Yeah, and you would have to speak to the person to know that you're in violation of that.
Exactly. So, this is so insane. This poor guy, you know, like I said, put some other thoughts aside for a second and just look at the facts of this and how he's getting railroaded through this. And it's ridiculous. But
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Now, you know, like, he's, you know, because of the thing, you're like, look at stuff like this. You're forbidden from using the internet because of being on the sex offender registry. And, you know, you were, he was given 2 years probation instead of the original 25 years, only because the original story landed on the front page of the New York Times. But he's in trouble, and he ended up in trouble again because he failed a lie detector test that he was forced to be given, which, you know, even by their own standards are usually ruled inadmissible. But, you know, just because he was asked if he had any contact with anybody under 18, and, you know, he's not thinking, he's at his friend's house hanging out with his friend, and he ends up alone in a room watching TV with his friend's brother because his friend walks out of the room and, like, comes back a little while later. Like, he's not thinking of that as, like, oh my God, I violated the terms of this holy contract. I must call my probation officer immediately. Like, literally, like, just trying to live his life put him in violation, and you know, it's like, this is so beyond insane. But this is what happens when government's in charge, and, you know, like you said, Shane, they're allowed, you know, the state's allowed to press charges even if the quote-unquote victim has no interest in doing so,
right?
But we were talking about this a little bit before the break, and both of you guys said I said we were eventually going to have to get to the whole age of consent thing, because, well, when it comes to situations like that, that obviously plays big into it. But both of you said you had different perspectives on that, and I was interested to hear what you had to say on that matter.
Yeah, what were you thinking, Shane? I'll let you start out.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and go first because you're actually unfamiliar with my position, and it might seem extreme at first, but basically, when it comes to, I guess, you know, the age of consent, a lot of people, you know, try to, you know, I guess when debates happen about this, people try to straw man certain positions, people appeal to extremes. And so I try to keep it as simple as possible. But for me personally, I believe that, you know, informed consent isn't necessarily possible until the person is capable of, you know, of being informed, is capable of doing so. And a lot of people believe that the prefrontal cortex of the brain is highly involved in this process. And people aren't always fully capable of an informed consent on certain topics until the prefrontal cortex of the brain is developed enough to, I guess, grasp certain subjects. And when it comes to sexual consent, that's one of those topics that people may not fully, you know, understand. And the brain doesn't completely finish developing, at least that part of the brain, until sometimes age 25. And ironically, you know, a lot of people, when it comes to, you know, I guess, moral agency, they may have physical agency, you know, but they don't demonstrate an understanding of moral agency until at least, you know, age 25. Some people age 40 or 50 still don't demonstrate an understanding of moral agency. But I believe that, you know, for fully informed consent to take place, a person not only has to, I guess, be capable of informed consent, but also to be able to demonstrate an understanding of moral agency as well. So a lot of times, yeah, I would draw the line around 25. And I know that a lot of people who are in the, you know, are in the 18 to 25 range, people who start going to clubs at 21, they would totally disagree with that. And it comes down to the individual, ultimately. If people younger than that were to make this decision, it's no one else's responsibility but their own. So while I may, you know, disagree on what the age of consent should be, I still agree that the law should not be involved.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I guess I can't argue with the scientific angle there, and that definitely wasn't something I was aware of or even really thought about in this situation. For me, one of my big issues and pretty much one of the things that has driven me to activism and to fight for freedom in general is the extreme lack of freedom that I experienced as a child growing up. And like one of the things that is really important to me is freeing the children. And that's like a big part of my activism and stuff like that. And that's why I'm really into the, you know, whole peaceful parenting thing and stuff like that. And so basically, like, I wasn't like allowed to see the light of day until I was like 18. Like I wasn't allowed out to play. I got in trouble for pretty much every little thing every single day, to the point where my mother made it so I was never allowed to do anything. So I didn't have a life until I was an adult. And, you know, so there was no consent for me. And so basically I take a very extreme position of, you know, as soon as kids are able to do what they want, you know, with their bodies, then they should be able to do it. And that may be because I'm coming from a position of emotion with that. But, you know, I feel that, you know, A, people mature at different ages, and B, if they aren't able to make their own decisions, then that implies that somebody else is responsible for making decisions for them. And the people who are in those positions aren't always going to make the best decisions. And now the child isn't always going to make the best decisions for themselves either. But I feel like somebody making mistakes on their own with freedom is a little bit better than not so. And maybe I'm coming at it from a weird angle, but like I've always really tied the age of consent thing into a child's freedom thing. So if anybody wants to kind of push back on that.
I actually do agree with you on that, and I grew up in a similar situation myself. And like I was saying, it's a very arbitrary line that we draw. Should it be 18? Should it be 25? And I believe that as far as maturity goes, there are teenagers who could probably pass a standardized test of moral agency somehow, you know?
No.
But I hear the break or the music coming in, so we're going to go for a trip to the market, and we'll be back.
Arms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Meow.
So we're back for the final segment. And John just sent us some happy news, so I guess we'll run with this for redemption. We'll try to put all the negativity behind us. And for redemption of the third act, tonight we have a story about a Maryland guy, a guy from Maryland who drove 1,300 miles to return a lost dog to its owner. Which is a really wonderful story. Even more so wonderful as I was reading through this quickly and seeing what actually happened. Apparently, the former boyfriend of this particular, the owner of the dog, ditched the dog on the side of the highway, I guess, or no doubt, oh, this is a Maryland's Eastern Shore. Just left the dog there, and unfortunately, the owner actually lives in Wichita. So, and she's a single mother who was having difficulty trying to get the dog back because like the Humane Society picked it up and found that like figured out that the dog's, you know, through the microchip, who the dog belonged to, which is, you know, something, you know, my dog's microchipped, and I'm always thankful that she is, because, you know, that's the one thing, if, you know, dog ever gets away, you know,
mark of the beast.
But here you go.
My dog's microchipped too. I'm joking.
You know, but here you go. You have a dog literally, you know, 1300 lives, 13, you know, the dog's found 1300 miles away from its owner. And so this woman actually tried to do everything. Like, she couldn't get time off from work to be able to go and actually get the, she's like, otherwise I would have driven myself, but she couldn't do it because she's a single mom who's trying to work and all this stuff. And she actually, you know, tried to have the dog flown back, but because it was a pit bull mix, all the airlines who fly dogs were like, nope, sorry, we're not going to do it. Which, I mean, that's a whole other issue we could get into and I could talk about for hours. My whole issue with specific
dog racism.
Yeah, exactly. The dog racism. Dog racist, I hate you all. Anyway. So here's this poor, you know, poor woman. All she, you know, her dog, she's trying to actively get her dog back home after it was abandoned by this horrible individual, and, you know, just can't do it. So this guy steps up and says, you know, I'll take care of it for you. And what's his name? Zach Holt, who used to work for the, you know, used to volunteer for the Humane Society, decided to make the drive from Maryland all the way out to Wichita, Kansas. 1300 miles to drive this dog home, which is really, really awesome.
Yeah, there is good in the world, despite, you know, what most of us see online and in the news.
Worms.
That's one of those things that I've always dreamed of doing. And just because, especially once I got my business up and running, but then of course I was too busy to be actually able to take trips like that. But, you know, you hear, you know, I've heard about stories like this before, and it really is just, you know, yeah, like you said, despite all the horribleness that goes on, there are good people out there. And here's this guy, you know, for no, not asking for anything in return, just saying, here, I'll help you out. And, you know, that's, I don't know. If there was more people like him in the world, we'd have a heck of a lot less issues, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
Worms.
Yeah. So here's to you, Zach Holt. You definitely take care of our redemption for the evening, you know, because if it wasn't for you, we were going to have to go, instead of redemption, we were going to have to go with the Darwin Award, you know, for some idiot who put his head in a microwave filled with cement and actually thought that was a good idea to get YouTube hits. You know, talking about the state of the world.
Yeah, I know.
That guy, despite almost dying and his friends freaking out, still considered the whole event and having to get the local fire department involved in order to get the cemented microwave off of his head, you know, to the point where the fire department was tweeting how horrible, you know, how disgusted they were that they had to waste 5.5 hours.
I hope he got all the clicks that he wanted.
Well, no, that's what I was going to say. Like, you know, talking about the state of the world, like, despite all this, this guy still thinks it was a rousing success because they ended up getting, like, you know, 600,000 you know, views or something on the YouTube
video.
That
ain't even that much, man.
Or maybe more, but like, it's like,
if his YouTube channel, if his channel is monetized, he should donate some of that to the fire department.
Yeah, sadly, people like him, I don't think would. People like Zach, on the other hand, Zach Holt, he probably would. But like I said, we need more Zach Holtz and less microwaved idiots. Anyway, this has been a fun show, guys. Thank you for joining me tonight. And thank you, everybody else, for listening. For more of us, go to freedomfiends.com.
Worms.